Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Author Chats. I'm Elizabeth Kelly. On Author Chats, we feature in-depth conversations with writers about their recent works. And today, we are honored to have with us criminal defense lawyer Deja Vishney of the Wisconsin Public Defender's Office to discuss with us her book, her compelling new book, Suppressing Criminal Evidence, published by James Publishing Company. Welcome, Deja.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Elizabeth.
And thank you for joining us. This is an intensely readable, an intensely practical book that I think is a must-have for every criminal defense lawyer. And beyond that, I must say, it's written in English. That is to say, it's very easily understandable, so clients and their families could also use this as a valuable resource as well. Deja, as you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had on the show your colleague, also from Wisconsin, attorney Jerry Buting, to discuss with us his book, Illusion of Justice. And Jerry represented Stephen Avery, the subject of making a murderer. And Mr. Avery's co-defendant is and was a young man by the name of Brendan Dassey, who at the time of his interrogation was, number one, a juvenile, and number two, suffered from some developmental and intellectual disabilities. And he was interrogated by the police without his parents, and his confession came in at trial. That case was litigated a number of years ago. If Mr. Dassey were tried again in 2017, in most jurisdictions, would that interrogation be conducted as it was? And more importantly, would a confession like that be admissible at trial?
Well, sad to say, in most jurisdictions, the interrogation would be conducted exactly the same way. The police officers who interrogated Brendan Dassey used a methodology or an offshoot of a methodology known as the Reed method, and that's taught all over the country. Reed and Associates is an interrogation training outfit that operates out of Chicago. It's been in existence for 60 years, and its methods are considered so coercive that it's referred to several times in the famous Miranda decision, where the U.S. Supreme Court said you have to read a person's rights before interrogating them because the methodology is so coercive. The heart and the soul of the Reed technique are exactly what they used to be. And in fact, I'm a Reed-trained interrogator, and although the Reed book plays lip service to the notion that juveniles should not be interrogated in the same manner as adults, when officers actually attend the Reed training, that's not mentioned whatsoever. So, sad to say, he probably would be interrogated the exact same way. As far as whether or not a trial judge would allow the confession to come into evidence, that would vary from location to location depending on the case law. Brendan Dassey's conviction was overturned by the federal court in Wisconsin. A decision was issued that the interrogation was coercive and that balanced against his deficits, both his cognitive disability and his status as a juvenile, that it should not have been admitted. That decision was appealed by the prosecutor to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and their decision on the matter is expected any day. So if they rule in favor of Dassey and uphold the magistrate decision, that may have a very profound impact nationally on the interrogation of juveniles.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Author Chats. I'm Elizabeth Kelly. We're talking with Deja Vishney, who is a longtime member of the Wisconsin State Public Defender's Office and who has written an important new book titled Suppressing Criminal Evidence. Now, Deja, the front piece of your book has a wonderful blurb that starts out by saying, "When in doubt, file the motion." And it encourages attorneys to litigate suppression issues, to file pretrial motions, not only to keep tangible evidence out, but also keep testimonial evidence out, like Brandon Dassey's confession. I take it from the tone of that blurb in the beginning of the book that, sad to say, many criminal defense lawyers don't litigate these issues enough, or at least not enough in your opinion. Is that a correct read?
Well, I think it depends where you practice. Where I practice in the Milwaukee Trial Office of the Wisconsin State Public Defender, we're very aggressive about filing motions. There's usually motion hearings going on every week, and our lawyers file them if they see an issue they can litigate, whether they think they're going to win and or lose. Unfortunately, in the past, I've heard lawyers talk about not filing a motion to suppress because they think the judge will rule against them, and that's really not the standard. The standard is, what does the law say? Is there a reason in the law that you should be arguing the motion? Unfortunately, around the country, many trial judges don't grant motions, and the cases have to be appealed, and that's how the law develops and proceeds. And there's many situations, you know, both in confessions, for example, in the Dassey case where the trial judge did admit the confession and then the federal magistrate judge said it really violated his rights under the U.S. Constitution. Another really good example is in the eyewitness identification area where courts in several states, most notably Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Oregon, have consistently suppressed eyewitness identification, saying that trial judges should take the science more into account. So it's very important to file motions and aggressively litigate on behalf of your clients.
Well, and beyond that, I would imagine that in most jurisdictions, you need to file the motion to suppress, even if you think it might be denied, because you need to preserve that issue for appeal or it's waived. Wouldn't that be correct?
Absolutely. If you don't file a motion, the only route that an appellate lawyer has to try and bring relief to their client is to show that the trial lawyer was ineffective or did not provide effective assistance of counsel. That's very, very difficult. It's really the trial lawyer's job to litigate these issues so that if you do lose, a higher court can hear what occurred. Now, in federal court, it's a little bit different. Because when you bring a motion in federal court, you have to preserve the issue for appeal in a different way. Either the prosecutor has to agree that if you do a guilty plea, it's what's called a conditional guilty plea, and your client can still appeal the suppression decision, or you have to have a trial. But generally speaking, in state courts, the fact that you filed the motion and had the actual hearing means that you have a right to appeal. That's the case in Wisconsin, where I practice.
We've talked a lot about suppressing testimonial evidence, but the first part of your book deals mostly with suppressing tangible evidence. And in particular, the new frontier, if you will, of tangible evidence is electronic evidence. That is to say, computer-related evidence and cell phone evidence. What has been your experience litigating these issues before judges who may, if you will, be a bit older, may not be as sophisticated with technology, may not understand it?
Well, I hate to discriminate against older people and judges.
Sure.
I think it depends from judge to judge how well they keep up with technology and with the law. The United States Supreme Court decided a couple of years ago that there has to be a search warrant in order to search a cell phone. And certainly in that decision, the court got it. They understood that when you're carrying a cell phone around, you're really carrying around a little mini computer, and that it's got a tremendous amount of private information. And therefore, they ruled that courts have to have search warrants before they can search these devices. And certainly, we have to say that the U.S. Supreme Court consists of older judges who have a wealth of experience before they join the court, ranging in ages from their 50s to the 80s. So I haven't found that much of a problem with explaining technology to judges. I think what's difficult is that trial court judges are sometimes reluctant to suppress unless they have the word from the U.S. Supreme Court or the highest court in their state saying you have to suppress this evidence, and the law varies state by state. In Wisconsin, for example, our current Wisconsin Supreme Court is extremely conservative and very reluctant to suppress evidence at all. I would say that the United States Supreme Court, as conservative it is, and it really is a fairly conservative court, is much more open to looking at suppressing evidence. For example, a few years before the cell phone decision, they ruled that police can't just attach a GPS to a car to track people's movements, that violates the Fourth Amendment and a property interest that a person has in their car. So the U.S. Supreme Court has been reasonably forward-looking when it comes to technology.
You mentioned the United States Supreme Court a few moments ago, and Justice Antonin Scalia was a real friend of the Fourth Amendment, if you will, although he couched most of his decisions under his philosophy of being an originalist. Do you have a sense of where newly appointed Justice Gorsuch might be on Fourth Amendment issues?
I really don't. Justice Gorsuch is really unknown when it comes to Fourth Amendment issues. He did style himself as an originalist in the manner of Scalia, but it's not entirely clear what that means. He's new to the court. When a person is on the U.S. Court of Appeals, it's really hard to tell exactly where issues are going to play out, where they're following the decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court, as opposed to being on the court itself and really giving you a fresh opportunity to interpret the law. So his position on this remains to be seen.
We are recording this interview on June 15th, and we are about to head in the middle into the middle of our year's busiest travel season. And one of the opportunities for searches, one of the instances where the average American comes face to face with some type of search, is at the airport by TSA. What, generally speaking, if any, rights does the ordinary traveler have in terms of refusing to have bags searched, refusing to have a pat-down search, refusing to have an X-ray image taken of his or her body?
I would say they don't have any rights to do so. The need for airport security and national security really trumps your privacy rights. So you're essentially, when you buy a plane ticket, or when you, not really when you purchase a ticket, but when you go to the airport to board your plane, you are consenting to a search of your bags and your body by TSA for security reasons. And the law is very clear that they can do this. So your option, not to take the plane. If you're taking the plane, you're essentially consenting to the search. And the same is true, by the way, is when you cross the border into the United States, whether you came in an airplane or if you came by ship or walking or taking a train or a car, you can be searched at the border as well. That's a well-recognized exception to the Fourth Amendment.
Got it. Final question to you before we conclude. Deja, this is an incredible book. It is several pages or several inches thick. It not only has text, but it has a number of sample motions. It has practice tips. It's in its first edition, which I would take to mean that in the future, you and your publisher are contemplating a second edition. When did you, as a busy attorney, an attorney with a full caseload, an attorney who actively tries cases, including major felonies, find time to write this book?
Well, you know, it took me years to write the book. I was initially asked by the publisher to consider writing a book back in 2009. The book didn't come out until March of 2016. I'm a public employee, which means I never write a book on work time. I did it entirely on weekends and evenings. So it
Wow.
took quite a while. And yes, there will eventually be a second edition to the book. And I'm
All
working
right.
on that right now.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, when that comes out, you have a, you certainly have an invitation to be on Author Chats again. Love having you on the show, and thank you all to all of my listeners. We've been talking with criminal defense lawyer Deja Vishny of the Wisconsin Public Defender's Office about her new book, a magnificent resource for criminal defense lawyers and also their clients and their families, titled Suppressing Criminal Evidence, published by James Company. Please remember, injustice anywhere threatens justice everywhere. Have a good day.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.